You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Soul Chronicles, where we discuss life and times navigating the sports, sneakers, Hollywood, and corporate America. We're excited because today is the first time that we're having a guest. So, you know, it's been a lot of me and Nikita, and we thought we don't want you guys to get bored with us. So we want to bring in some more Soul Chronicle stories and other interesting people. I'm your co-host, Mohammeda El-Muhajir, and I'll let Nikita introduce our guest.
Hi, everybody. You know what? I'm so excited to have as our very first guest someone I've known for a very, very long time in the industry. And I think the cool thing about our podcast is while we do have a lot of celebrity stories, we also have a lot of stories just working with executives behind the scenes. And I think that, you know, to be able to hear from some of them, especially somebody as amazing and as accomplished as our guest today, is something that the average person just really wouldn't get this kind of insight. So I'm happy to be able to bring this to you today. So I want to introduce our co-host. No, he's not our co-host. He's our guest. a dear friend of mine, Rich Murphy. I've known Rich for several years. We came up in the agency world together. We'll talk a little bit about that. He's got a really fascinating background that I can't wait to dive into. So Rich, welcome to the Soul Chronicles.
Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, ladies. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to know I'm your first guest.
So yeah.
Thanks for thinking of me.
Absolutely. I couldn't think of anybody better. I mean, you definitely sit at the cross section of a lot of these industries, music, film, TV, agency. So I couldn't think of a better person. Give us a little bit of your background. Where are you from? And how did you get into the Hollywood world, if you will?
Well, I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York. I lived there till I was about 10 years old. And then we moved out to Long Island, Uniondale, Long Island. It's like near Hempstead, Roosevelt, that area. I basically spent my formative years out there. And then after that, I went to college in Florida for about 2.5 years and came back to New York. And,
you know, where did you go to school?
The Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale.
Okay. I was just checking to make sure it wasn't like Florida A&M because we both went to HBCUs. So I'm just checking.
Nah, you know what? My head was wired different. Like, I didn't want to go to like a 4-year university. Like, I had no interest in that. Like, because of my background and my lineage, you know, like, and just what's in me, I wanted to be in the entertainment business from the get-go. I'm a singer, I'm a songwriter, and all of that is in me, and that's in my bloodline. You know what I'm saying? So, as you know, years ago, right, I'm talking like in the 30s, 40s, my grandmother went to a hand reader or psychic, what have you, whatever you want to call it. And this woman told my grandmother that somebody in your family is going to be world famous, internationally known. Their name will be in lights, the whole nine yards, right? So she goes back home. She tells, my father had 5 brothers and sisters. So she comes back home, tells all of them what the psychic told her. All of them run out and start taking tap dance lessons and piano lessons. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, because, you know, it's like, oh, it's going to be me. It's going to be me. And, you know, like my father and his brother, you know, they had a comedy duo, Roy and Ray. My aunt is a classically trained pianist. So, and my grandmother, she was a singer. She danced. She told jokes. Like, so again, it's like, it's part of the lineage. Unfortunately, none of them became the big stars, but the next generation did. And my cousins, Eddie Murphy and Charlie Murphy, they, you know, obviously Eddie is the big one internationally, you know, the whole nine yards, and he kind of, you know, he broke through, he cracked the code. But they were the ones who were the famous guys and named in lights. And being a part of that family, grow up with my father sang around the house all the time, he's cracking jokes, my uncles, everybody, you grow up around that, you're part of it. Then I realized that I had some talent. So my goal in life was to, you know, get a record deal and, you know, be a singer and the whole nine yards. So I was like, college, I don't need that. I'm about to be a star, son.
Right.
So,
right.
So I'm on the blow up.
So, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, I'm set. So, you know, I found that school and I was like, all right, well, this is great for me. It'll teach me what I need to learn, you know, music business. You know, I'll learn how to record and engineer and all of this stuff. And I went there, I graduated, you know, got a bachelor's in music and business. And then I came back to New York and kind of, you know, my father owned the club and I kind of, you know, flopped around the club for a little bit and, you know, helped run things there. And then Eddie was a client at ICM at the time. And my
Rich,
brother
is he older cousin, younger cousin?
Older.
Okay. Older. Okay. All right.
Definitely older.
I'm sorry, Rich. So you're like, don't push me up all the way there. Sorry. Okay, that's your big cousin. All right.
That's
okay.
My big cousin.
Okay.
Him, my brother, and Charlie used, you know, they all kind of grew up together, hanging out at my aunt's house. So when he popped and got famous, my brother was working for him. My father eventually started working for him. And my brother talked to some folk at ICM and got me an interview. Right. Yes. To join the agent trainee program, which I don't even think exists in the agency business anymore. But I didn't know what I had kind of read up about agents when I was in school, but I didn't really know anything about that world. So I went there, I interviewed, got hired, worked at a mail room for 6 months, learned some things there, then moved on to the contracts department. Right. Learning how to issue contracts. And that's where I learned how a deal was made, back end deals and flat versus a flat deal. And, you know, that kind of stuff. And I wanted to be in music. There was only one black music agent in New York. That was Mark Cheatham. And he had an assistant. So there was no way, you know, I basically had to just sit around and wait for an opportunity. I didn't think I was going to get that opportunity. And then miraculously, for some reason, I don't know if she couldn't take it anymore or, you know, she just wanted to move on. But his assistant quit. That opened the door for me and he let me be his assistant. And, you know, the thing with Mark, him and Charlie were in the Navy together.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I went to him and I said, look, man, give me a shot. Let me work for you for 6 months. You know, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, no hard feelings. This is about business. This is, you know, it ain't about my family and who you cool with or not, you know, just give me the shot. So he gave me the shot and, you know, I you know, became his assistant and I worked for him for a good year. And then eventually he allowed me to start booking because I picked it up really quick. So he let me start booking very early. And I just kept doing that. You know, he had Usher in the very beginning and I used to book a lot of Usher's dates. And I just kind of, you know, just kept going from there and kept booking. And eventually, you know, I was bringing clients to the office. And then they made me a junior agent. Then eventually I became a full agent.
Okay. Wow. Let me just stop right here and big up Mark Cheatham. I mean, real talk. Mark has been in the game forever. I think now he has Cardi B, a couple other people.
Yeah. Cardi B, Justin Bieber. I think he's working with Migos now.
Yeah. And he's always been an open door for, at least for me, I know, to be able to pick up the phone and call and say what's up. So we got to pay homage and give a shout out to Mark Cheatham.
Yeah,
so Muhammad, it sounds like you're just burning with questions. I could feel it. I could feel it through the lines.
Oh, well, I mean, I think, so Rich, our very first, this is just perfect alignment because our first episode was how we got in, which we really kind of talked through exactly what you're talking about, what it was like. As I said, you know, we met at William Morris. I was Kara Lewis's assistant. So everything you're saying, you know, I totally understand all of this, but I think we're missing a few things. Okay. You are this like Brooklyn guy at ICM. And there is probably like one other black person there. Like, give me just a little, just give us a vibe of how, what that experience was like. You pushing the mail cart, like what was happening? How was it for you?
I mean, me pushing the mail cart, I mean, I did see that there were like maybe three other black people there, you know, right. But in, you know, in music,
Mark was the only one, and his, you know, him and his assistant. There was only one other Black person, like, in film and TV. She's actually a good friend of mine, and we're actually partners now in another agency, and maybe we'll talk about that later. Huh? It was a handful of us, and kind of, you know, spread out, either assistants or, but the most color was in the mailroom, you know, mm-hmm. and that's just the guys who worked the mail all day, right. every day. They weren't in the trainee program. Right. But, you know, it was intimidating because that was my first experience in corporate America. And regardless of who my family is or what have you, you know, I've always been a shy person. I've never been the type of person to kind of tout that and, you know, wave a flag like, guess who I am or whatever. You know, people used to always do that to me. Like, you know who he is? That always used to bother me because I was like, well, why does that matter to anybody? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not him. I don't got his money. I can't wave a magic wand and make your world better because that's who my cousin is. Like, I'm just me. So, you know, I never walked around wearing that flag. But it was, you know, it was intimidating just until I got to, you know, start learning the business and you get familiar with faces and, you know, just like what people do and they get comfortable with you. But, you know, it was still intimidating because you feel like you got to work 10 times harder than everybody else because you're Black.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the sort of overarching point that we sort of somehow, no matter how wide we make this circle in terms of our topic, it always comes back to that fine point.
Right.
Is that, right. You know, you are working harder. You are working. I mean, our desks were right next to each other at ICM. And I can count many a days where we were the ones there late at night.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Grinding it out bright and early in the morning, grinding it out, because they're really, you know, for us to have a level of success, we really did have to be 10, 20 times better and 3, 4, 5 steps ahead of the game. And nobody was giving us anything. I mean,
giving us anything, not even giving us guidance, yes. You know, or advice. It was just like, hey, just figure it out.
Yep. And so I think, and I would venture to bet that even for you, you had more to prove because perhaps you wanted to have your own name and not lean on your family's lineage and legacy. So then you was really on top of it. So talk to us a little bit about that moment where you decided, okay, ICM is good. It's been great. I done worked my way up from the mailroom, the agent. Now it's time for me to move on. What was there an event? Was there a particular goal that you had and it was that day? Like, how did you decide?
Nah, it was a couple of things. The year or so prior to me leaving, Charlie blew up on Chappelle's show, right? Charlie used to, he would call he was a client at ICM too, but nobody was paying attention to him, right? Mm-hmm. And Mark, quote unquote, was kind of like his agent. But you know, Mark was a music guy. We were music guys. So we weren't, you know, we would look at breakdowns and try to find stuff for him. But the reality is we weren't talking to the studios and talking to casting the way, you know, film and TV agents were. So we couldn't help him that much. But, you know, he would call me and we'd sit on the phone and talk on the phone for sometimes an hour, 90 minutes. And I'd have to force him off the phone. Like, dude, I got to go. But while we're talking, he's telling me all of these amazing stories about him being in karate or this story, this what happened when he was in LA or what have you. Little did I know.
Playing basketball with Prince. I mean, come on.
Well, nah, I didn't hear that story, but you know,
oh, you didn't hear that story?
I didn't hear that until I saw the show. But stories similar to that, that mm-hmm. you're not thinking like, oh wow, this is, you know, this is great TV. You know, you're just sitting there laughing your ass off. Hey, can I curse? You're laughing your butt off. You're laughing your ass off just because it's funny. And he called me one day and said, yo, man, we just shot, you know, the sketch we shot is going to air tonight. Make sure you check it out, Rick James. So I was like, all right, cool, whatever, you know. Like, you know, again, I'm an agent. I'm in my world. I'm doing my thing, whatever. So I'm all right, cool, yeah, all right. I get home. You know, me and my father lived in a brownstone in Brooklyn at the time, though. So my dad was on the top floors. I was on the bottom half. So I went, you know, I went upstairs to my dad and I was like, yeah, man, you know, Charlie's on Chappelle's show. He said he's going to get this sketch, you know, something about Rick James or whatever. Then my father chimes in, Rick James, that motherfucker. And then he starts to tell a story. Motherfucker came over and stomped on Eddie's couch. And I was like, what? I was like, get out of here. He's like, I'm telling you. Right. So then I go and watch Chappelle's show and that's the sketch. And I was just floored because, it was because it's like, yo, this is true. Like my father had no idea that's what they did. And it was true. So anyway, fast forward to not even 2 weeks, the next day, my phone started ringing. People were asking, yo, how much for Charlie Murphy? And I'm like, well, how much for Charlie Murphy to do what?
You know? Right. What's
people
the gig?
Just started calling, blowing up the phone. So I called. I was like, yo, man, yo, my phone is on fire. Like, he's like, well, what I'm going to do? I said, I don't know. He said, I ain't got no show. I said, well, we got to figure it out. Right. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, I'm going to restaurants, I'm taking meetings, and I'm hearing people off to the side dropping catchphrases. I'm Rick James, bitch. I'm listening. I'm like, yo, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. Right? So he on his own, him and Donnell Rollins, Donnell basically dared him to go get on stage and do stand-up, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm taking a long time to get there, right?
But, no, this is good. This is good.
But Donnell challenged Charlie. He was like, oh, you know, you a tough guy, you this, you that, whatever, but I bet you won't pick up that mic and go do stand-up. And Charlie wasn't one to back down, so he went on an open mic night one night and went up in there and did like 15 minutes. And he just kept going back. And then finally, you know, what happened was the demand for him was so large, we figured out to put a package together, the I'm Rich Bitch Tour. So it was Charlie. Charlie would host because he didn't have a whole lot of time. So he would host. Bill Burr, who's killing it right now, Bill Burr would be the feature. And Donnell Rollins would close because Donnell was more of the most experienced stand-up out of them all. And we did that tour for a year. They made a ton of money, sold out shows at all the comedy clubs, what have you. And then Charlie realized, hey, look, you know, everybody's coming to see me. So he developed himself into a headliner and started working on more minutes so that he can get up to that 50-minute minimum for him to become a headliner. And we were just kind of on a roll. And then these movie roles were coming in and all of this stuff was starting to happen. So I officially became his manager. And so now I'm doing that and I'm doing the agent thing. And then meanwhile, I'm trying to get ICM to pay attention. I'm like, look, there's potential here. They're like, this is what's going on. This is what we're doing. From none of those guys in the comedy side, nobody was paying attention. So there was this young scrappy kid named Mike Berkowitz who was booking the tour and booking Charlie. He worked at this really small agency or what have you. You know, Mike Berkowitz now is at William Morris. He represents Kevin Hart, Louis C.K. Like, he's got some of the top comedians in the game. But that guy started out booking little dates on Charlie and Donnell and those guys, right? So fast forward, like I said, about a year into doing all of that, a contract at ICM came up for negotiation, mm-hmm. and they didn't want to negotiate. They basically didn't want to give me any more money. And really, that's at that point, that's when there was a clash in the hierarchy. So, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that war that kind of went down between the East Coast and the West Coast guys.
Yes.
Yeah. And the system, it had, you know, we fell under the umbrella of the whole music department, because at one point we were the urban music department and then there was the music department or concerts. And then once that battle happened, they kind of morphed everything into one department. And it didn't have the same feel mm-hmm. as family that it did at that time. You know what I'm saying? So I was just looking at it realistically. I was like, well, look, I'm making more money being his manager than here. They don't want to give me more money. Mm-hmm. So I'm out. So we, you know, we had an amicable split and I went off and started managing Charlie. You know, for me, it was about doing something more than the music. I wanted to be in comedy. I wanted to do film. I wanted to do TV. So, you know, and I couldn't do that there because they didn't believe in crossing departments. Mm-hmm. When I did leave ICM, I mean, you remember Karen Sellers, right? So
yes.
Yeah. So did you have anything to do with this? I don't know. Were you still there?
No, maybe. I mean, well, you know, my memory
she
is not
she brought this
best.
Deal. Yeah, me either. But she brought this deal to the table, this Nike deal, right? This big campaign for Charlie, right? We had already left ICM. But she came, she was like, you know, I've got this great deal, you know, this offer. Would you guys be interested? And it was like this large campaign for Jordan Brand, for Charlie to play this quote unquote character based on a real life guy, Leroy Smith, right? And Leroy Smith allegedly was the guy who pushed Michael Jordan to become great. Not in that he coached him or gave him advice or anything like that, but he used to just basically bust Jordan's ass in the court all the time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when they were in high school or whatever, you know, he would just always best him. And Michael used him as motivation to get better and better and better. So they came to us with this whole thing. They had a Leroy Smith sneaker. They, you know, we shot like these little. it was a big campaign. We did a lot of stuff, you know, big photo shoot. Mm-hmm. We shot these commercials, shot like these interview packages. We recorded a song. Well, no, we didn't record the song. Ryan Leslie recorded the song, but we like shot a video. Charlie was lip syncing Ryan Leslie's voice. It was hilarious. It was a video game. It was crazy. It was crazy. So now I remember we went to this, I don't know what it was, some kind of press event, I guess. Michael Jordan was there. So, but we, you know, they wanted Charlie to do like this presentation and they wanted him in character, right? So he, you know, and the character he created was hilarious, right? This like this balding guy with this, you know, big afro on the side and nothing on the top, big mustache. But you're just going to Nike, man, and just seeing that compound. It was, mm-hmm. It was incredible.
The campus.
It was, yeah. I was like, what in the world? And just like what was dedicated to Jordan Brand alone and the stories of how a line of sneakers got scrapped because it didn't go through Jordan's approval. So they just scrapped the whole line of sneakers. Like they had already been manufactured and everything. It's like, toss them. It's like, what? it was crazy.
Yeah, it's an alternate universe.
Yes,
so
it is.
Not something that a lot of people get to see and experience, but Nike Campus and the Nike brand in general is just an entirely different world that exists inside of our world. I'm looking here online and the Jordan 1 Retro Leroy Smith is on sale somewhere for $340.
But wait, Rich, wait, what happened? Really? Like the Leroy Smith, I never even saw this. I mean, it rolled out everything.
It only lived online. It was only online.
Okay.
It didn't, yeah. But if you yeah. Google it and you just put in Leroy Smith, you can see all of the videos.
Okay.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I'm like, whoa, this is
I wish it had blown up a little more because, you know, like they gave him a piece of the merch, like the Leroy Smith t-shirts and, you know, the sneaker itself.
Well, maybe we need to make some calls and revive Leroy Smith.
I know, because it sounds like a fly concept.
And this conversation is so good. I would love for it to go on forever, but I have to just make this one point that out of this whole story, what I heard is that an opportunity appeared. Charlie on Chappelle, it blew up. And then you, out of your mind, created something. Oh, let's put this show together. Well, I'm not a comedian. That's okay. We'll let you host it, right? And I think that to me, is the most important thing of this whole conversation, that people think that you have to have all the pieces, all the answers, has to be this perfectly tied package with a nice little neat bow, and then you can start. And what I just heard you say is that, no, I just had a glimmer, a spark of an opportunity, and then I made something out of that. And then when we created this thing, it continued to balloon. And then now Charlie's got 50 minutes because we realized that's what it's going to take to make him the headliner. Now we've got this really important property that we've developed. And I think that is something that people in their everyday lives, especially in a COVID world, can just like Think and Grow Rich, right? The Black Edition. Start where you are with what you have, knowing that what you have is enough. So I just had to throw that out there for people to pick up on and not miss. Muhammad, what you got?
Yeah, well, Rich, I mean, what happened after that? What I mean, you and let me just say, rest in peace, Charlie Murphy. I mean, I don't want to just talk about his whole history without recognizing his contribution to comedy and entertainment. And yeah, so definitely.
Absolutely. And that also makes me think of, this takes us off course a little bit, but since you did bring that forward, Muhammad, just wanting to pay a lot of respect and homage to Charlie, it does make me think about Chadwick and the fact that here are two men who were working. I don't think a lot of people knew Charlie were sick, was sick.
No, nobody knew except for me and the doctors.
Wow. Yeah, and so I think that just says so much about Black men and their resilience, their just sort of royal nature, in that they have the ability to put their own stuff, even if that stuff includes suffering, to the back burner in order to really be focused on creating a legacy for themselves and for their posterity. And that is not something that we often get to stop and recognize. Mm-hmm. So I definitely am glad, Muhammad, that you brought that forward.
Mm-hmm. Rich, so what happened? I mean, you started managing Charlie, and how did your business expand? What's happening now?
So I started managing Charlie, and, you know, I was done with music. I was like, screw that. I didn't want to do it no more. You know,
and
I still,
changed,
you know,
too, right? Didn't music change?
The business changed. Everything was changing. So I was just like, you know, I want to do this now. But, you know, I Ashanti was one of my clients at ICM. And, you know, I had worked myself into a point where I was really ingrained with her and her team. And, you know, it was like a family thing. So she was the one client who I stayed in touch with and I, you know, stuck close to. And then she put out a new album, and then I had to service her for that. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting phone calls from promoters and people who, you know, when I left ICM, I just left. Like, I didn't send out no email saying I'm moving on, or I just left.
Right.
And so people were looking for me, and they started to find me, and then they started calling, and then I started kind of doing the middle agent thing, and, you know, calling other agencies and helping them broker deals, because, you know, the Caras and the, you know, Rob Lights wouldn't talk to them. Mm-hmm. And then I started building up my business from there, like just getting back into the music. So now I'm doing music, now I'm doing comedy, now I'm mm-hmm. learning how to book comedy acts, and I got relationships at the comedy club. So now I got comedians coming to me wanting me to represent them. Tiffany Haddish should have been mine, but the problem with Tiffany at the time was I was really busy with Charlie and Ashanti and a couple other acts. I was, you know, small company. I didn't have a big support staff. Tiffany was not that funny as a stand-up, but when I saw her reel, she had some acting scenes on there, and I said, you know how she's going to blow up? Acting. Wow. I called that back, I can't remember, 2000 something. Mm-hmm. But I knew she had the chops. Again, like I said, she wasn't that funny as stand up to me, but mm-hmm. I said she's going to blow up as an actress. Like, mm-hmm. I still do believe that, like I think at some point she's going to win an Academy Award, because I've seen her do her thing, and she's got the chops. But wow. Yeah, so I just was doing that, what have you, and then we were doing our thing with Charlie. We got it to the point where he was on this tour, this arena tour with comedy legends, Cedric, D.L. Hughley, George Lopez, Eddie Griffin, and he was holding his own, and they embraced him as a brother. You know what I'm saying? Even though he was as far as comedy goes, he was baby of the group, but they embraced him. So, you know, and that of course expanded my relationships with those guys or whatever, you know, like, you know, the past two summers, you know, not this summer, but the last two, you know, I was a tour manager for George Lopez, you know what I'm saying? Which, you know, not my usual gig, but I know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And his guy was on tour with, you know, Smashing Pumpkins. So they called me to fill in. And so my business is just through my relationships, and kind of just, I have a foot in the comedy world. I have a foot in the music world. I have a foot in the management world. I got real estate in the agency world. So mm-hmm. as I mentioned, my friend Francesca, she was on the film and TV side at ICM. She had hit me up one day about 9 years ago and was like, look, I'm starting this agency. Do you want to be a part of it? So I said, yeah, but I didn't really put my all into it just because I was doing so many other things, you know, mm-hmm. but what I was trying to do with her was allow her to have access to my celebrity clients like Charlie and Faison Love and Ashanti. I was like, look, if you could bring me a film project, TV project that their agents they're not paying attention to, it's under their radar, bring it to me and let's get it done. So mm-hmm. that's how we kind of started out, but it's evolved into more. I'm more involved now. I signed Faison over there. I've got CJ Wallace over there. CJ is Notorious B.I.G. and Faith Evans' son. You know, he's got some really great things going on. I got Salida Ebanks, you know, former Victoria's Secret's model. So we're just booking them, and, you know, I'm also, you know, kind of dealing with talent and content development. So, mm-hmm. you know, we work with a number of writers and producers and directors. So just trying to build that business up. I'm still doing my management thing. I manage this young director named Alfonso Johnson. Alfonso won the best short film, HBO Short Film Award at ABFF. Ryan Coogler won that same award. Stephen Cables won that same award. Wow. And he's about to be one of those next guys too. Really, really talented young director. So I'm managing him. So I'm doing a lot of stuff. I'm wearing a lot of hats.
Yes.
Wearing a lot of hats. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to figure out. And look, I just had a conversation with Comedy Hype the other day. You know, they're looking for a talent director. I was like, I'll do it.
Right. Look at you. But once you have those skills, experience, and network, that's what starts to happen. And why should you not take those opportunities? You know, there's probably very few people who have the kind of like level of experience that you have. And if you can do it all, take it all, collect all the checks.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. Whatever checks are out there now, just COVID and messed everything up.
Yeah, and I think, you know, COVID definitely has impacted a lot, but it's also opened up opportunities to force people Absolutely. To think differently and to maybe create some things that would, I mean, for this podcast, for instance, I mean, Muhammada came to me with this a year or 2 years ago, and I was just so busy. I was in New York once a week with Viacom. It was started as one show that I was doing, handling talent for and promos, turned into five shows of theirs. Plus doing some brand integrations for Lopez Show and all this, thing, plus my philanthropy work. So I was just like, I don't think so. But when things slow down, it's like, oh my gosh, I have time now. And how stupid was I to not do it before?
But so, no, it probably just timing. I mean, I think timing is everything. Right. Yeah.
And timing is everything.
Yeah. And as you said,
your brain has some time to figure it out.
Yes. And content, yeah. People are looking for interesting content. So I think before probably would just not have been the right time. But I think now people are looking for interesting content and stories, and podcasts are really blowing up right now. So I think this is the best time.
Absolutely. And I'm just so happy that we have created a platform where we can bring some of our really dope friends on to talk about not only their work, but to celebrate sort of what they've done. And also, I hope, inspire people, no matter what industry. I mean, we happen to be talking about sneakers, Hollywood, corporate America, sports industry. But regardless of the industry, I think our experiences are relatable and translate to whatever you're doing. And this episode Absolutely. Is just about creating a path where there isn't one, having one small little opportunity and then just taking it to new heights. So I just want to thank you for coming on the show. And Muhammada, I'll leave it in your capable hands.
No, thank you.
And what's your social media handles, your personal, your business? You know, how can we follow you?
On Instagram, it's at EmancipatedTLNT. And on Facebook, my thing is, I got two. I got my personal, which is just Richard Jermaine, Jamaine Murphy. And then the business page is Emancipated Talent Management Consulting.
So why emancipated?
Because that's how I felt when I left ICM. I felt like I was free. I felt like I was unshackled. I felt like I was able to do what I wanted to do. Because like I said before, you know, when we were, you know, working with Phil and them, you know, Phil was trying to do like urban film through the urban music department. And, you know, like, you know, this is the time when, you know, the Latifas and the LLs were starting to get mm-hmm. into film and TV. We were trying to create a department, you know, where we could kind of funnel our musical talent into film and TV and tell those stories. But we met so much opposition. Just like anytime you tried to do anything with the film and TV department, it seemed like they was always, you know, they would act like they were helping you, but they were really not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Look, you know, we know.
Yeah, it did so become like a really weird competitive type thing. I mean, it's one thing to like just, it's hard enough and competitive enough with your competitors to do your job. Right. So if I'm at ICM, William Morris, I'm trying to knock them off. CAA, they're trying to knock me off, whatever. But then when you have that internal conflict, it's like now I'm fighting my competitors plus internally my colleagues.
Right. It's like we're supposed to be trying to win together.
Two full-time jobs, not to mention the core job that you're hired to do. That kind of stress and mental anguish that just putting your key card in the door and walking into the office, that weight you feel before you even sit at your desk.
Right.
Like, people have no clue. You have no idea. No idea.
Absolutely. So, you know, when I left, that's how I felt. Like, I had no contract. Just the way that system was, you know, you know, you don't say you're a slave, but you kind of feel like it was a white hierarchy. So that's how I felt. I felt like I was freed. I was emancipated. I was able to do whatever it is that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. So wow, that's how I love that.
Came up with
emancipated
that.
Talent.
It was really exciting having Rich Murphy on as our guest today, expanding what we've been talking about, just what life is like navigating Hollywood and corporate America, and just being a young Black person in these spaces. And Rich, thank you so much for joining us today. Hope you enjoyed your time on the Soul Chronicles.
Bring me back. I still got more stuff to say.
You got more stuff. I mean, I feel like everybody could have their own podcast. So, we look forward to definitely having you back. And I'm sure you're going to have a lot of exciting things just coming up with some of the clients that you have working with. So please stay tuned to another episode of the Soul Chronicles. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at the Soul Chronicles. And if you have someone that you want to hear about or want to hear from that works in the sports, sneakers, or entertainment industry, be sure to just send us a message and we'll try to get them on. So until next time, we'll see you later.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.